So we'll go on to verse 4 now. So he says, this leisure and endowment, which are so difficult to obtain, have been acquired, and they bring about the welfare of the world. If one fails to take this favorable opportunity into consideration, how could this occasion occur again? So verse 4 is about the precious human rebirth. Okay, this topic comes in the Lam Rim at the very beginning. The Lam Rim is the gradual path to enlightenment. Okay, so leisure and endowment. In the Lam Rim, it talks about 8 leisures and 10 endowments. 8 leisures meaning 8 unfree conditions that we are free from right now that enable us to really practice the Dharma, and 10 conditions with great endowments which, you know, make us have a precious human life so that we're able to practice the Dharma. So that's what this verse is about. Okay. So these conditions are so difficult to obtain. They have been acquired, and they bring about the welfare of this world. I remember so clearly when I began to first study the Dharma after I first met the Buddhist teachings, and I heard these teachings on a precious human life and, you know, all these different freedoms and the different fortunes. And I just kind of scratched my head and I said, this is really boring, you know. Why are you talking about this? It doesn't make any sense, you know. Like, so what, I'm not born as an animal? So what, I'm born in a place where the Buddha's teachings exist, you know. I just was going, you know, what a boring meditation. And it actually took me quite a number of years to really appreciate the power of this meditation and to really appreciate what having a precious human life means. Because it doesn't just mean being a human being, okay? There are many human beings, but a precious human life is a human being who has the conditions to be able to hear the Buddha's teachings, to think about them, and to put them into practice. And as we look around in society, how many people really have the opportunity to do that? Yeah, it's not so easy having the kind of life that we have, where we have the opportunity to meet the teachings, and where we even have the interest to meet the teachings, and where we're able to meet the teachings. Yeah, one of my friends, Alex Burson, he visited Singapore many, many years ago, but he also traveled in the former Soviet republics before they took the Berlin Wall down. And he told me that, you know, he went to teach, I think it was in Czechoslovakia one time, and, you know, because it was a communist country, you know, people weren't allowed to be religious. He went there just as a tourist, and there were a group of people who were interested in Buddhism, and so he agreed to teach them. But what they did is they met at somebody's flat, but all of the friends had to come separately to the flat, and they all had to arrive at different times because it couldn't look like they were having a gathering of people come. But when everybody did come, what they did is in the front room, they had a round table and they put out cards, you know, playing cards, and they made it look like they were playing a card game. And then they went into the back room and they had the teachings. And they put out the cards, making it look like they had a card game, just in case the police came, so that they could very quickly go from the back room where they were having the teachings into the front room, sit around the table, and make it look like they were playing cards. Because, you know, if the police came and saw them just having a Dharma teaching, they could be in big trouble. Now imagine living in a country where you didn't have the freedom to practice your own religion, you know, where you had that kind of fear of the police, You know, I mean, all you're trying to do is do something virtuous, and you're threatened by the police throwing you in prison. No, very difficult situation. So, you know, if you think about it, there are people who live in those kind of situations right now where they can't practice the Dharma, where they really have to be quite careful, and they're very afraid of being found out because the government, you know, outlaws religion. So how fortunate we are to live in a free country where there's freedom of religion and where we can practice our faith. You know, that's tremendous fortune. But, you know, how much do we think about it? How much do we appreciate this opportunity? Yeah? I mean, don't we take a lot for granted? Singapore is such a very rich country, such a peaceful country. Now, but do the citizens appreciate, you know, do you appreciate where you live and the opportunity that you have? So many Buddhist teachers coming here. So much going on in terms of the Dharma. And yet, do people take advantage of it? Or, you know, is it, you know, I'm too busy. Yeah, that's the big excuse everybody gives. I'm too busy. And you can never question anybody when they say, I'm too busy. You know, you can't say, what are you busy doing? You're just supposed to say, oh yes, I believe you. But what people mean when they say, I'm too busy, is they mean, that isn't important to me. So when people say to me, oh, it's so wonderful you come to Singapore to teach, but I'm too busy to come. Oh yeah, I'm supposed to travel all the way from the U.S. to come here, and I'm not supposed to be too busy to come here, but it's okay if you're too busy to come? Excuse me? You know? Or people say, oh, I can't come, it's so far to drive. Yeah. Oh, I see, I'm supposed to come halfway around the world, but you can't come a half an hour in the car? Okay, so, you know, do we really take advantage of this opportunity, or does our mind make up all sorts of excuses? You know, I have to go here, I have to go there, I have to do this and that. We don't have to do any of those things. You know, all the excuses we make up for why we can't attend teachings or retreats or why we can't, you know, have a regular daily practice, they're all basically excuses. You know, when we say, oh, I have to go to work. It's not I have to, I choose to go to work. Yeah. Or I have to do this and that in the morning. It's not have to, I choose to. Or I have to go to this company gathering in the evening. No, you don't have to, you choose to. Okay. I think it's very important for us to really look at our life and see how much choice we have. And get out of this mind that says, I have to. Because basically the only thing we ever have to do is die. That's the only have to. Everything else is optional. Think about it. Okay? Isn't everything else optional? The only thing that is certain in our life is that one day we will die. Everything else, there's a choice involved. Whether we take the choice or not, that's up to us. And sometimes we say, I have to, in order to avoid acknowledging to ourselves that we're really choosing to do something. So we use the excuse, I have to. Okay. But I think it's actually much more honest to say, I choose to. And then to really look, well, what am I choosing to do? How am I choosing to use my time? Am I choosing to use my time to work many hours overtime and neglect my family and be too busy to attend Buddhist teachings? Am I choosing to sleep many more hours than I actually need to sleep instead of to get up and meditate? Am I choosing to watch television in the evening instead of going to bed early so I can get up in the morning and do my meditation practice? What am I really choosing to do? Okay? So I think we have to be quite honest with ourselves. And whenever you hear yourself say, I have to, stop and rephrase it saying, I choose to. And then really ask yourself, is this what I want to choose to do with my time? I do have a choice here. Is this what I'm choosing to do? Okay. Because if we phrase things that way to ourselves, then we're really accepting responsibility for our lives. And we will start to make wise choices because we'll realize we have the ability to make those choices. Okay? So even in the biggest thing, when we say, I have to go to work, phrase it and say, I choose to go to work, because you don't have to go to work, do you? You could choose not to go to work. Of course, you get the results of not going to work, but you do have a choice. Okay? So it's much more honest to think that way. And then really ask ourselves if what we're doing is something worthwhile, something valuable. At the time when we die, when we look back on our life, how will we feel about the choices that we're making now? You know, just the day-to-day, moment-to-moment choices. How will we feel about those at the time we die? And if we think that way, we will really become much more mindful and aware and will make much better choices. Now, I also wanted to talk a little bit here about what these leisures are. Because they're usually explained in the Lamrim as the 8 and the 10. And I think many of you have heard these before. And so in the footnote here, when, Alan and Vesna referred us to the commentary, and the commentary referred us to the Gandavyuha Sutra, which is one part of the Avatamsaka Sutra, then I went to the Gandavyuha Sutra, which is translated into English, and I found this section in it. What was it called? The Jayo, I can never say it. It's quite a long term here. It's the Jayo Smayatana Vimoksha passage. Okay? So it was, the Gandavyuha Sutra is a wonderful sutra. It's about, the main figure is a practitioner called Sudana, and he wants to learn how to practice the bodhisattva's deeds. And so he goes from one teacher to another. Each teacher teaches him something and sends him on to another teacher. And so he goes to 53 teachers altogether. So Jayo Smayatana Vimoksha is one of the teachers that he goes to. And here it talks about the conditions that are difficult to attain in order to have this precious opportunity that we currently have to practice the Dharma. So I looked up the passage and I copied out these different activities and so, or these different conditions that I'll share with you now. So one thing is that it's difficult to enter the Mahayana. So just the Mahayana teachings, these beautiful teachings that show us how to attain full enlightenment, it's difficult to encounter the Mahayana. You know, we could encounter so many other paths, so many other teachings, but we haven't. Instead, we've encountered the Mahayana teachings of the fully awakened one, the Buddha. So what kind of great fortune do we have that we've received this difficult to receive condition? Okay. And it's also difficult to avoid situations that are inopportune for enlightenment. Okay? So it's very difficult to avoid, let's say, lower rebirth, or it's difficult to avoid having various physical or mental ailments that inhibit us from practicing the Dharma. So, but we have avoided those conditions. How fortunate we are. It's also difficult, number two, is it's difficult to be human. Okay? There are so many different kinds of living beings. We could have been born as animals, as hungry ghosts, as devas who experience incredible bliss. But we weren't. We have a human life. Very fortunate. Okay? It's difficult, number three, to remove error and doubt about the right opportunity. Okay? So it's difficult to obtain the purity of leisure and endowment and to really appreciate the circumstance, the opportunity that we have. Number four is it's difficult to find a Buddha in the world. Okay? It's difficult to be born in a time when a fully enlightened one has appeared on this earth, has given teachings, and where there's still a lineage of those teachings existing in a live and vibrant way from the time of that fully enlightened one down to us. I mean, what incredible fortune to be born at this time in this place where we have the lineage of the Buddhist teachings. Number five is it's difficult to have all of our faculties in order. Okay? So it would be very easy to have impaired faculties, to perhaps be blind, to be deaf, to be physically handicapped or mentally challenged. But we aren't. All of our sense faculties are intact. We don't have Alzheimer's disease. We aren't senile, at least not yet. You know, so how fortunate we are to have our mind alert and our body capable so we can really practice the Dharma. Okay, then number six, it's difficult to hear the truth. In other words, it's difficult to hear the Buddha's teachings. Even if we're born in a place where, you know, Buddhism exists, it's still difficult to hear the teachings. I mean, even in Singapore here, what, there's about 4 million people? How many people have the fortune to hear the Buddha's teachings? Yeah? A comparatively small percentage. In the country I come from, the U.S., it's an even smaller percentage. Yeah? So how fortunate we are to actually encounter the Buddha Dharma and be able to hear the teachings. Because without hearing the teachings, how are we going to practice? Yesterday, somebody came up to me and asked about, is it possible to just meditate on your own without having a teacher? And I think that's a bit difficult because we really have to learn how to meditate. So we have to have a teacher and really learn and put it into practice. Yeah. So hearing the Dharma is difficult. Yeah, and then another condition that's difficult is to meet people of truth. So encounter good people. Yeah, in other words, good Dharma friends, people who we can share the Dharma with, people who we can, who will encourage us in the practice. And if we look around, how many people around us have really good ethical discipline? You know, when we look at the five precepts, you know, to abandon killing, stealing, unwise sexual behavior, lying, and taking intoxicants. How many people around us, how many people do you know, conscientiously abandon those five actions? Think about it. Yeah. How many people do you know who don't drink alcohol? This is one of the big things people always say to me. I have to drink, you know, this have to business. Yeah, when I go out with people in my company, I have to drink. You have to drink? They're pointing a gun at your head and they're going to shoot you if you don't take alcohol? Excuse me? I said, no, I have to drink. Well, why? Well, because they're going to think I'm funny if I don't drink. And this is usually the parent of a child who says to their child, oh, if your friends are doing things that are not good, don't do it with your friends. Don't fall prey to peer pressure. But what are the parents doing? They say, well, I have to because all my friends are doing it. So the parent is succumbing to peer pressure, and at the same time, they're telling their child not to. Oh, I see. That's very logical, very reasonable, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Okay. So parents really have to live what they're teaching their kids. Yeah. And so you have to do it, you know, really for the benefit of the future generation. Because your kids look at what you do, not what you say. It's very easy to say things. But if, as parents, if you don't do, you know, and live the good values that you're trying to teach your kids aren't going to believe you. Yeah. So really try and do it for their benefit, if not for your own. Okay, so it's hard to meet people of truth. It's hard to find genuine spiritual teachers. This is really hard. Remembering I was saying, you know, the spiritual supermarket and so many people just, you know, claiming themselves to be realized beings. To really meet authentic spiritual teachers, it's not that easy. You know, I mean, think about so many different countries in the world where they have no access to spiritual teachers. Yeah, yet here, you have so many people coming and teaching you when you have time to attend. Okay. It's difficult to receive genuine guidance and instruction. Okay. So it's difficult to meet the teachers and to receive their instruction. And it's also difficult from our side to be attracted to the Dharma. Okay, to have an interest in the Dharma. So we have to really appreciate that part of ourselves that has a genuine spiritual yearning. So instead of, you know, ignoring our spiritual side, or covering it up, we really need to respect and appreciate that part of ourselves that wants to understand what life is about. And that part of ourself that is really yearning for genuine spiritual freedom. It's really important to respect and appreciate that part of ourselves. Okay? It's hard to live right in the human world. It's hard to live with a good livelihood in this world, isn't it? You know, so many people come to me and they say, how do you be business? How do you do business and keep the five precepts? And I say, what do you mean? And they say, well, in order to do business, you have to lie. And I say, you remember this? You have to lie? Really? You have to lie in order to do business? No, you don't have to lie. One of my friends used to be an executive in a very prominent Hong Kong company. And she told me that actually your business, it does much better in the long term if you tell your customers the truth. Because if you lie to your customers, they're going to find out and then they'll stop doing business with you and they'll also tell your friends, their friends, not to do business with you. But if you tell your customers the truth, then they'll trust you and they'll keep coming back because they trust you. So in the long term, being honest in your business actually makes your business prosper because of the trusted relationships that you build up. Okay? So really think about it. You know, how many people have right livelihood in this world? Now, do we have right livelihood in this world? Okay, and then it's also difficult to carry out the truth in all aspects. So it's difficult to really live the teachings, you know, to embody the teachings in our life. But we have the opportunity to do that, and so let's really appreciate that freedom and that fortune and try and put the teachings into practice as best as we can. Okay? So when we look at all these different conditions that were spoken of in the Gandavuha Sutra, that, you know, and we check and we see that we have them, that we have all these conditions that are actually difficult to obtain, then we have a sense of great joy. And they say that the joy we feel is like a beggar who finds a jewel in the garbage. Okay? So if you look at it, we're kind of like a spiritual beggar, aren't we? We're impoverished spiritually. If we were to find a jewel, you know, the jewel being our precious human life with all these positive circumstances and opportunities to practice, and if we really value the Dharma, then wouldn't we feel like an impoverished person who found a jewel in the rubbish? Yeah? So when I was telling you that when I first started studying this meditation, I used to find it kind of irrelevant and boring, that's basically because my mind was irrelevant and boring. Not that the teachings had any fault, but that my mind was very, very obscured with rubbish. Because subsequently, I've really come to appreciate this meditation. And that has come because I appreciate the Dharma. So the more I appreciate the Dharma, then the more automatically I appreciate having the opportunity to learn it, to practice it, to try and live it in my life. Yeah. And the more I do that, then the more in turn I appreciate how incredibly fortunate I am to have this opportunity. Now, so especially when we think of all the different things we could have been born as, but we weren't born as them, you know, we were born with this precious human life, then we really feel so fortunate, you know. And if we feel fortunate for having these things that are difficult to find, then we don't moan and groan if we don't have as much money as we would like, or if we don't have the social life we would like, or if people at work don't appreciate us enough, or if we aren't praised enough, or if we don't get the promotion, or if somebody else is richer than us. You know, when we really appreciate having a precious human life, then all these other little things in our life that used to seem so important and so worrisome, that we want so much, then all of a sudden those things really seem rather trivial and foolish. Yeah, why would we be so attached to reputation? Reputation doesn't do anything good for us, you know? Because if you look at it in terms, you know, if what we really value is the opportunity to practice the Dharma and the opportunity to attain spiritual realizations and enlightenment, well, how does a good reputation increase that opportunity? Does it? Does it increase your opportunity? No. You know? Who cares what our reputation is? When you go to study with a qualified spiritual teacher, they don't care what your reputation is. They don't care what level you've achieved in your corporation. Yeah? So, you know, those being attached to those things really isn't very worthwhile in the long term, because in terms of gaining spiritual realizations, having reputation and image and fame doesn't help at all. Not one single iota. Okay? So, do you get what I'm saying about when we really appreciate the Dharma and appreciate a precious human life, then some of these other things that we used to fret about and worry about and our mind would spin round and around and around about, all of a sudden those things seem so inconsequential. I didn't get the promotion. Actually, that's better. Yeah, because when you get a promotion, you have to work more overtime, don't you? You have more stress, so you have more health problems. If you don't get the promotion, you have so much more freedom in your life. Yeah, your health is better. You get to attend Dharma teachings. Yeah, so think about the benefit of not getting the promotion. Really, you know, so many things that we worry about in our life, if we learn to think properly, we would see that some of the things we worry about are actually incredible fortunes. Like people say, oh, I didn't get the bonus I wanted at work, or, you know, I should earn more money, I want more money. Yeah. Well, what is money going to do for you? Is money going to get you enlightened? Yeah? You can't buy enlightenment. You can't hire somebody else to practice the Dharma for you. You know? You can't say, look, you know, I'll pay you $100 and you meditate every day for me. Yeah? It doesn't work that way. Yeah, practicing the Dharma is like eating. We have to do it ourselves to get the benefit. We can't say, I'm hungry, please eat dinner for me. Okay? We have to do it ourselves. So too, we have to practice the Dharma ourselves. Money doesn't give us that opportunity to do that. In fact, sometimes when we have a whole lot of money, we're more distracted from Dharma practice because it takes a lot of time to manage the money, doesn't it? Because you're so worried, do I invest it here? Do I invest it there? What brings me the most interest? And, you know, how's the stock market doing? And, you know, and all these relatives I didn't know I had are coming to ask me for loans. You know, what do? I give them the money or not? Okay, so sometimes it can be a huge distraction. So, you know, if you don't have as much money as you want, say to yourself, great, you know, what a wonderful opportunity. I'm not really rich. I can practice the Dharma much better. Okay. And really think about this, you know. I remember one time I was asked, this was several years ago, Bill Gates's best friend passed away, and I was asked to preside over his memorial service, which was held at Bill Gates's house in Seattle. I lived in Seattle at the time. And I came back from doing that memorial service, and I took a walk in the park near where I live. And it really hit me. Wow, I can walk in this park. Bill Gates can't walk in a park. Think about it. You know, if you're a really rich person like Bill Gates, you can't even walk down the street, can you? You're so afraid somebody's going to kidnap you. Even with his children, you know, his children need bodyguards because if somebody might kidnap them and hold them for ransom because they know that mom and dad have so much money. Think of how captivated, how limited the lives are of people who are very rich. You know, they can't walk down the street like we can. They can't do simple things. You know, they can't just go to the market and you know, get some rice. Simple things that we take for granted, very rich people can't do. Very famous people can't do. Okay? Think about it, the fortune we have of not being too rich. It is a fortune, isn't it? Yeah. So don't complain about what you have. Be satisfied with it.